Okay, looks like we're live. Sweet. What's going on, guys? My name is Davidson Baker. I am a freelance editor, co-founder, writer, concierge, blah, 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 gringogossip.com. And this is my 12th episode of my podcast, The Bottom Line. I'm doing a live simulcast on YouTube. Got some stuff going on anchor.com as well that I will upload to on my page there. You know, just your typical run-of-the-mill pod from me. Before I get started, I want to give a shout-out to my good friends over at BetMMA.Tips. BetMMA.Tips is your number one-stop shop and source for betting on fights. If you have a fight that you want to bet on coming up soon, you want to make a little bit of cash, BetMMA.Tips is the best place to go. Sign up, show up, bet up, BetMMA.Tips, and at BetMMA.Tips on Twitter. So I'm going to talk a little bit about Kawhi. Kawhi's trade talks today with, you know, likely most people immediately presuming that the Lakers are going to be the landing spot. I think that that's likely the case. I don't necessarily think that that's a done deal, but I think that that's probably going to happen, especially with, I mean, Kawhi Leonard is expected to make, I think, less than $31 million if he remains with the Spurs this season. Generating the level of cap space that a team is going to have is going to be key when determining where he's going to get sent if you are the San Antonio Spurs. But I really don't see this ending well for the Spurs in any way possible, just because, like, this trade could end up becoming it really could end up becoming one of those, you know, one of those nasty situations, man. It's not a good look, especially with Greg Popovich just coming out and saying that he's getting ready to retire. It's really not a good look, man, like, at all. Give me a sec. I'm going to take these off. It's a little hot in here. All right, so let's get into it. I'm going to just really quickly analyze three teams that I think could be good fits. Number one, I'm going to go also from least likely to most likely destinations. Damn, it's hot in my apartment today. What's it outside? 81? Shit. All right. Number one being the Boston Celtics. Remember, I'm going from least likely two most likely in that order. I'm going number one, the Boston Celtics, as the least likely, but I really only think there's three options here. You know, the Celtics, I have a hard time believing that the Celtics are just going to, like, flock out draft picks. I also believe that there are very few potential routes you can go that are optimal for Boston as far as getting rid of these guys that they have groomed or been started to begin grooming to become superstars, such as like a Jason Tatum or a Jaylen Brown, or, I mean, even at certain points in the playoffs, like a Terry Rozier looked like that. However, I don't believe that the Celtics will be as serious of a player in this deal. I think that they might, you know, hop on the phone. I think Danny Ainge might hop on the phone, but not all that likely to me. Number two, the New York Knicks. You know, the New York Knicks, especially now by hiring David Fizdale, who is a player-first type of coach, the one thing you hear unanimously and universally from guys that play under David Fizdale, I mean, I would challenge anyone on the planet right now to find a clip of any player that played under David Fizdale, either when he was a head or assistant coach. Give me one instant where somebody said, oh, David Fizdale, oh, yeah, he's all right. He's an okay guy. Players love that man. Players love that guy. When he got fired from the Grizzlies, you got Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, Juwan Howard. The list goes on. Some of the most respected names in the sport coming out being like, what the fuck, dude? What the fuck are you doing? So that makes it appealing, especially when that may be the polar opposite to what Greg Popovich represents. And guys love Greg Popovich too. I'm not saying Greg Popovich isn't a guy that is loved amongst the players and the player community in the NBA, but Greg Popovich is business, man. Greg Popovich is like the Bill Belichick of NBA as far as maybe even success goes, and as far as, you know, determination and focusation on the task at hand goes. So, that being said, none of that has anything to do with Kawhi. But why the Knicks? The Knicks have plenty of cap room. They have a bright future. They got a top pick. I could say they have a hole at the two position, but they got holes everywhere, man. So, number one. Sucks. He's going to be a prohibitive favorite to land in LA. And I mean, you know, the beauty about my own podcast, you know, one day I'd like to be on an unbiased platform, but I can be as biased as I want right now. And you know, I'm not the biggest Laker fan. But man, with interest becoming something that's being generated out of exactly what things are being talked about. Now, here's one thing I don't think will happen. I don't think that Kawhi, Bron, and PG all end up in LA. I don't think that will happen. I do think Kawhi and Bron is a serious possibility. League interests are showing right now that, or league rumblings right now are showing that Paul George is thinking about staying in OKC, which would shock me, especially as a Thunder fan. It would shock me. But you never know. My buddies all dead. So here's the thing. There are there are a lot of things that happen in the NBA, especially in recent memory, with these, you know, generated soap opera, drama-filled senses of stories. And Kawhi being traded there would be one of them. However, that being said, LeBron James, I think it was Jason Whitlock that said this, if not Cowherd, I just saw a quote of it on Fox's Twitter page. There are stories that become big NBA stories, but LeBron James going to the Los Angeles Lakers is not a big NBA story. That is an international, worldwide breaking news phenomenon. It has everything you could possibly want if you're the NBA. If LeBron James lands in LA, think about how hard it's going to be to get a ticket at the Staples Center next year when the Lakers have home games. It's going to be damn near impossible. Think of how much season tickets are going to cost. Jeez, man. Jeez. You know, Laker fans have been sitting around and waiting out this storm for a while, and it could be over in a big way. So, I think he ends up in LA, but we'll see. It's going to be interesting also to generate the gauge of what exactly was the final breaking point of why Kawhi came out so aggressively and it's hard to say a lot of things about it because I'm still kind of frustrated, to be honest. He's even said the Lakers are his preference, you know. And of course, you got Adrian Wojnarowski, man. I mean, that guy is like fleas on shit. Okay, so I'm not going to spend too much time dwelling on that. I'm going to move on. All right, for real this time. The FIFA World Cup started on Thursday. I was supposed to have a World Cup special edition preview podcast with my good buddy Tino. We recorded it on Tuesday. It was about 55 minutes long. And the son of a bitch of audio didn't ever never showed up. Never showed up. Thanks a lot, Anchor. Thanks. Appreciate that. Was a damn good episode too. I had fun. Anyway, I went down my whole list of predictions, and so did he. In a sense, I like Argentina to defeat Brazil in the final. And today, there were three games. We had some late winners in Uruguay and Egypt. The big story coming out of that, Mohamed Salah not playing today following his injury, thanks to Sergio Ramos in the Champions League final a few weeks ago. So without Salah, and now that they lost that game 1-0, you got to think that Salah is going to be a shoe-in to absolutely, because he would be in any other scenario, he's going to be a shoe-in to play in these next two games, and they're going to have to be on the attack. Bad news is, other two teams in your group are Portugal and Spain, who played out an absolute masterpiece, I might add. Let me just say something. If you're one of those guys that isn't really a fan of soccer, yes, I am talking to you, Father, because I know you're going to be listening to this at some point. I do not care if you do not like soccer, or if you'd rather watch paint dry than watch soccer, or if you think that friendlies is a stupid name, or if you think that you have no idea why Real Madrid doesn't play fake Madrid twice a year. Portugal and Spain was a hell of a fun time to watch today. It was awesome. 3-3. Draws are annoying, but 3-3 was the final. And you got a sense in the third minute when Ronaldo went down. I think it was Nacho's attempted tackle that just clipped Ronaldo right on the heel. I got a sense right when they put Ronaldo to the spot that, man, this one could be very exciting. And every single bit of it was. Because you start with the penalty when it's 1-0, 3 minutes out of the shoot. Then you move towards, Spain trying to become possession heavy. We see it a lot in Barcelona. Plus, the thoughts start to creep in the back of your mind. What the hell is Spain going to look like 2 days after they fired their coach? 2 days out of their World Cup opener, they fire their coach. Makes absolutely no sense. I have no idea why anyone would do that. Pretty dumb, pretty stupid. Would never do it. And then Diego Costa, just with brilliant footwork. It was picture perfect. There are and he squeezed it right through Jose Fonte and Pepe, who were right there. I mean, it was just brilliant. And I stood up and was like, oh my goodness. And it's 1-1 right there. And then you get another one from Ronaldo to make it 2-1 at halftime. Costa comes out and scores a header off of a or scores off of a set piece. And then the missile from Nacho. And I think about like the 53rd, maybe it was the 55th or 56th, somewhere around there, minute, which was an absolute missile off of volley. And it's 2-2 at that point. Or no, it's 3-2 Spain at that point. And before the game, a good friend of mine named Kevin said in a group chat that I'm in, Ronaldo just had a 2-year jail suspension, which, by the way, if people listen to this are not aware, is in hot water in Spain due to tax problems. He was handed down like an $18 million or something dollar fine and had a suspended jail sentence handed down to him today before the game. And my buddy Kevin was like, yeah, man, he's gonna go out there and hi, Linda. Got someone in the live chat. Hello, Linda. Okay. Ah, word. Okay. So anyway, there are at this point there are a lot there are very few things that guys can do when they're told, right before one of the biggest games of their lives. And Carmen and Ronaldo's been in a ton of those. But right before one of the biggest games of their lives, that you get handed down something, so something like that. It's serious. And everybody kept said, he's gonna go out there and get a hat trick. And he did. Scores right off his perfect place from the trademark position that he always puts. The perfect spot for the free kick, and he nails it. Good stuff, man. I had a blast watching it. I had an absolute blast. So you got in that group B, you got Portugal at the top. You got Portugal at the top with 3 points. Or no, Portugal and Spain are level on 1 point. Iran, who was probably jumping for joy that game went to a draw. The only chance they had, probably a sliver of hope whatsoever to salvage coming out of that group, was for Portugal and Spain to draw. Are they probably, and not even probably, are they 99.9% still probably not going to advance? Yeah, probably. So, big for them though. Got a feel for the guy from Morocco, man. 95th minute, heads it into the wrong goal pretty blatantly. And then early game today, Uruguay getting the win 1-0 over Uruguay getting the 1-0 win over Egypt. So that group looks like this. In Group A, you got Russia and Uruguay both standing at the top with 3 points. And Egypt and Saudi Arabia are going to have to play some catch up, nil-nil. Oh man, I mean, what I was saying earlier about Salah, that becomes pretty irrelevant now because I forgot they're in Group A. Yeah, all that, everything I said earlier about Mohamed Salah, yeah, you can probably ignore that at this point. They're in Group A, so that is definitely a salvageable thing for Egypt to be able to do now that they've especially played the front runners of their group in Uruguay and Russia. So, that goal scored late today by Jose Jimenez, 89th minute. Last thing I'll touch on the World Cup before I move on to the NFL. I don't think in my whole life, and let me tell you something, if you know me, it's weirdly gross and a little bit disturbing sometimes as to like how much I fucking love sports. It's weird. When I was like 3 years old, I'd pick up a football and run up and down a goddamn hallway and just scream touchdown for hours. I don't think in my whole life, and I mean ever, and I've thought about it. I've really, really thought about it. There have been only really a couple instances that really fit the sample size or, can put on the same size shoe. I don't think ever in my entire life have I seen as disgraceful and horrendous of a display at the elite level of competition that Saudi Arabia was yesterday. Holy mother of God, how in the name of hell did those guys qualify for the World Cup? And you know what? A tweet that I kept seeing today is like, how are Saudi Arabia in the World Cup and the US aren't? Well, buddy, you got to qualify through your continent. We don't play Samoa in the Virgin Islands in qualifying. You have to qualify through your continent and through the region outside of Australia. They got to play with Asia. You have to play through your region. In our case, We weren't good enough to beat Trinidad and Tobago on the last day. Sucks to suck. That being said, like I said, I don't think in my entire life have I ever seen at the elite level of top competition of what is maybe considered the mecca of a sport, I don't think I've ever seen a team look as disgraceful as Saudi Arabia did. Zero shots on goal, 61% possession. They possessed the ball 61% of the time in that game. And they allowed 5 goals. Russia scored 5 out of the 7 times they put shots on target. It looked like they, and you know, I'm a big X and O's guy when it comes to like sports that I played through the X and O's in, like basketball, like baseball. I kind of quit football before I got into all that, but playing NCAA football and Madden doesn't make you an expert on X's and O's, but it definitely helps. However, if there's one sport that I'm like not the brightest on in X's and O's, it's soccer, and I'll admit that. But still, to the naked eye, it looked like Saudi Arabia was just kind of like in the days leading up to that. It's like, okay, we're just going to go out there and just kind of wing it. We're just going to go out there and just kind of, you know, do shit, run around. Woo, yeah, we're in the World Cup. Oh my God, they looked so bad. Like, so bad. And one has to wonder with really exciting news breaking yesterday that 2026, the World Cup is coming to North America. What people do also need to remember is in 2026, the World Cup will be expanding to 48 teams. If we got teams that look like that right now, oh God, it is terrifying to imagine what it's going to look like in 2026. And you know, people in North America are going to be paying top dollar to get tickets to that. And oh, I feel bad for those people that are going to have to see that. That sucks. So, been really eventful though so far through 2 days. Tomorrow they got games in groups D and E. France and Australia at 6 a.m. Eastern time. Peru and Denmark at 12. That's an interesting matchup. Argentina and Iceland are at 9. And I think the most interesting match of the day, Croatia and Nigeria at 3 o'clock. Nigeria in Croatia, that's an awesome matchup. So I'm going to move on to a little bit of NFL offseason talk. I'm going to get to what we got as far as holdouts are concerned. Starting with Le'Veon Bell. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to run down this list of guys that are holding out from their contracts and what to expect. Starting out with Le'Veon Bell. Said a few months ago that or said back in January that if he got franchise tagged again, he would consider retirement. And about 2 months later, they tagged him again. So, sheesh. Pretty, that's kind of a slap in the face. The relationship between the two have not always been great either. He's come out and said that he's not going to sign for anything less than $14.5 million. On top of that, you know, people got to remember, too, Devontae Freeman is the second highest paid running back in the league behind Le'Veon. He only makes $8.5 million. So, I don't know which, you know, Le'Veon Bell can sit around and say that he deserves more and say that he, you know, has earned the right to make more. But, I mean, you know, what example do you have? What example or precedent do you have to make that judgment? You make $6 million more than the guy below you. Get it, it's a franchise tag, but still. I don't know. Then we have David Johnson, running back, Arizona Cardinals. David Johnson led the NFL in the yards of scrimmage in 2016, a little bit north of 2,100 yards. But he missed 15 games last year due to a wrist injury. Now, what's interesting about this is David Johnson could also get the franchise tag after this year's over. David Johnson is a free agent after this season unless the Cardinals decide to tag him. But the biggest thing that surrounds this and what I think about is he waiting potentially on the Steelers and Le'Veon Bell to figure things out to maybe like gauge what type of dollar amount that he might be worth. Regardless, Steve Keim, the general manager of the Arizona Cardinals, has already come out and said they're not interested in tagging him. So that's a situation I'd keep an eye on. Is to number three, Julio Jones. This is one of those cases where Julio Jones, this is one of those cases where people got to remember the salary cap goes up a little bit almost every year, if not 2 or 3 years, in all of the major North American sports that do have the salary cap. Obviously, if you know anything about the salary cap, that discludes Major League Baseball. So when you have a salary cap and you have guys that come out and break records and you have new athletic phenomenons and physical specimens come out and do the things that we thought at one point were never feasible by the human imagination, they're going to want more money. That's how it works. It doesn't take a it doesn't take an anesthesiologist to figure that out. So that being said, it should not come to a shock. There are a couple things about this that do kind of shock me, and I'll get to that. But it should not come to a shock that when Julio Jones signed his extension in 2015 to make $71 million over 5 years, at the time, he was the highest paid wide receiver in the league, highest paid wide receiver in the history of human imagination. You want to know what he ranks now, 3 years later? He ranks eighth. First thing that you think about, okay, who moved in front of him? Seven receivers that make more than him. So Julio Jones makes 14 and a quarter million a year, right? Antonio Brown, 17 million. Mike Evans, 16 and a half million. DeAndre Hopkins, 16.2 million. Sammy Watkins, 16 million. Ouch. Jarvis Landry, 15.1 million. AJ Green, 15 million. And then the real shocker, Devontae Adams, 14 and a half million. That makes no sense. You've got to think, when Julio Jones figures out word that he's getting paid around the same amount as Devontae Adams, probably a good idea to ask for a little bit of a raise again. And what also would make sense for Julio Jones is, he's already said he doesn't want to be the highest paid. He's already said he just wants a little bit more. Get out of that Devontae Adams range. The real reason probably why, and the what is incredibly smart on his management team's part is, he wasn't going to really have another opportunity to re-up on a bigger deal until his contract expires in 2021, and he'll be 32, man. Just like you want to go out on top, you want to negotiate a new deal on top. Really, definitely not the dumbest thing in the world for a guy like Julio Jones to want to renegotiate at this stage in his career. So, who else we got? Earl Thomas is another interesting one, and he sits in the same exact boat as Julio Jones. Earl Thomas, when he signed his last contract in 2014, 4 years, 40 million, 10 million a year, highest paid safety in the world. Now he's the fifth highest paid. Eric Berry makes 13 mil a year. Cam Chancellor, his teammate, makes 12 million a year. Rashad Jones, 12 million. Marcus Joyner, 11.2 million. And Harrison Smith, 10 and a quarter million. Earl Thomas just wants to be back at that top 13 million. I get it, makes sense. And I don't know why the Seahawks wouldn't do that. They've said that they would do that. Pete Carroll said they've been in talks with his management and representatives. And I don't know why you wouldn't. You've just traded your entire roster and then some. You don't have Cliff Avril. You don't have Michael Bennett. You don't have Richard Sherman. Makes all the sense in the world. I'd expect that situation to get done soon. One that's interesting, though, is Khalil Mack. Gabe Jackson and Derek Carr got paid last summer. So that effectively meant, and I remember Adam Schefter saying it, that effectively meant that Khalil Mack was going to have to wait a year, which can be frustrating, but hey, man, you're already making millions. What's to say waiting a year to make boatloads and oodles of millions is going to kill you? It's not. It shouldn't. Or else you're already a monster before you're getting ready to become one. Here's the thing, though. Khalil Mack, second in the NFL in sacks since 2015. He's got 36.5. It's rumored that he wants $65 million in guaranteed money. That's quarterback range. I don't know why you don't pay the guy. The thing is with that, though, now that you've got guys like Gabe Jackson, Derek Carr, and Khalil Mack signed to a deal that would give him $65 million guaranteed, which is not defensive player realm money at all. He deserves it, though. I think he does, you know. Second most sacks in the league since 2015. One thing that you can do always against a team with an elite-level quarterback, we've seen it in times that Tom Brady has failed under the brightest lights. We've seen it with every quarterback under the sun that has been so glorious in so many other moments that it's hard to get in a rhythm when guys on defense are in your face. And then on top of that, the guys that are in your face are also on average size 6'4", 290 pounds plus, and some of them can run like big level wide receivers or tight ends. You'd be distracted too. So, and then my last one, Aaron Donald. Some of you remember Aaron Donald didn't show up to Rams camp until week two of the regular season last year. Former defensive end out of North Carolina. Even though he didn't play week one, though, he still recorded 11 sacks, 5 forced fumbles, and ended up picking up the Defensive Player of the Year award, his first of his career. He's still sitting on that rookie deal. But I think once they get this done, and from everything that I've read and everything that I've gauged, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Once they do that, I would expect Aaron Donald to become the highest paid defensive player in NFL history. Right now, that distinction belongs to Von Miller at 6 years, $114.1 million. I would expect, and I believe if you're listening to this, you should expect as well, for Aaron Donald to eclipse that mark at some point this summer. So, there's that. Moving on, U.S. Open's been going on. It's been a shit show. U.S. Open's at Shinnecock Hills in Southampton, New York. And it's been a nightmare. Last time there at Shinnecock Hills was 2004. Retief Goosen was the winner. And he sat at 4 under par. I know Phil Mickelson was the runner-up. You can believe that. Phil Mickelson's only been the runner-up in 6 U.S. Opens, which is crazy, man. That's so crazy. Retief Goosen and Phil Mickelson were the only guys in that field to finish under par. And right now, Dustin Johnson has the lead at -4, and he's the only one under par. The conditions have been bad. It's been windy. The greens are real slow. The fairways are hard to hit. The rough, dude, if you're sitting in the rough, you've got a serious problem. It's a shit show. Ian Poulter today on the back nine, he was headed into his 17th hole, which today he played the back nine first and the front nine as his latter half. He was headed into his 17th hole today, which was hole 8. One shot off the lead. He had just birdied 3 of his last 4 holes. And then he gets in the rough, and dude, like, it did not look like he was going to get out of that rough without a Mack truck, man. The rough is brutal on this course. He ended up triple bogeying that hole, bogeying the last hole. So now, Dustin Johnson is your leader at 4 under. He shot a very impressive 69 today. Looking here, I think the only guys that eclipsed that shot 68, Tommy Fleetwood and Last year's US Open champion, Brooks Koepka. But right now, and Tommy Fleetwood and Brooks Koepka are amongst the four guys, five guys who are 5 shots off the lead. And then Scott Piercy and Charlie Hoffman are 4 shots off. Dustin Johnson looking good. He was actually my pick to win this tournament. Other notables right now, Ricky Fowler is at 2 over par. As I said, defending US Open champion Brooks Koepka is 2 over par. Justin Thomas, 4 over par. Phil Mickelson and Patrick Reed, both 6 over par. One thing I did not see, though, up until this point, did Jordan Spieth make the cut? Oh, dear. It's looking like he didn't. Damn. Jordan Spieth missed the cut at +9. He birdied 4 holes in a row going into 17 and then bogeyed the last two and ended up missing the cut. The cut was +8. Spieth +9. Other guys that missed the cut, Tiger Woods +10. I'll get to that in a second. Bubba Watson +10. Rory McIlroy +10. And Sergio Garcia +14. Yikes. Got a feel for Tiger. He triple bogeyed the first hole yesterday and then bogeyed the second. He kind of ripped on him. He ripped on himself today. He didn't shoot poorly today. He shot a 74. Yesterday he shot an 80. Yeah, and that first hole gave him problems again today. He double bogeyed the first hole. That same hole that he tripled yesterday. So sucks. I'm ready to see Tiger back in contention at a major championship, and I thought, given some of the success that we've been having from him, that we might see it this weekend, and he got swallowed up by the belly of a beast. That is Shinnecock Hills. So, quick shift into a Major League Baseball update. Around the world of Major League Baseball, it's starting to heat up. Cross divisional races and wild card shoots. My Boston Red Sox, 48-22, they're looking good. Yankees are right behind them. They've played fucking six less games, if you can believe that. They're a game behind. The American League Central is a shit show. Other than the Indians, no one in that division has a record above 500. But how about the American League West? Houston Astros 45-25, and Seattle only sitting a game and a half game behind them. How about Seattle finally finding success after their boy Robinson Cano gets popped for special supplements? It's interesting. Angels now find themselves though 7.5 games back. They got off to an amazing start. They find themselves now 7.5 games back of that division, and yeah, it's starting to look like now, pretty early in the season, pretty early to tell. We've seen teams go on crazy runs before, but it's starting to look now as if you are not the Yankees, Astros, Red Sox, or Mariners, you're not going to get a wild card spot. And that's also if you're not two of those four, because two of those four will win their divisions. And then on top of that, oh no, yeah, no. I mean, it's tough, man. And then, the Indians win the lottery by the rest of their division being awful. I mean, the rest of their division is awful. Then in the National League, how about the Brewers, Braves, and Diamondbacks atop their respective divisions? Brewers posting the best record in the National League, 41-27. Right now, as it stands, the Cubs and the Nationals are right behind that wild card gig. So how about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams being within 7 games of a wild card spot in the National League? That's just as many as how many games are behind the Angels, who are the first team looking out of the wild card, 7 games. Man. Divisional races, though. I mean, the Atlanta Braves have been a really good feel-good story. They haven't played all that well as of late. I'm pretty sure they're 5-6-4 in their last 10, which is, it's above 500. They're a game and a half up on Washington. The Phillies are quietly lurking there at 4.5. They've got a lot of young talent. Brewers game and a half ahead of the Cubs. Good to see the Cardinals good again. They're 4.5 back. The Dodgers look like they're finally picking up steam. They've won 8 of their last 10. They are sitting 2.5 south of the Diamondbacks. Giants 4.5 back. Rockies 5. So that about does it for me today. Can't wait for tomorrow. Got some World Cup action. I'll be watching tomorrow, and then I'll definitely be glued to my seat tomorrow night to see Errol Spence, pound for pound, one of the best boxers on the planet. He'll be defending his IBF 147-pound title tomorrow night against Carlos Ocampo. Hopefully that sets him up for a unifier against maybe Keith Thurman. I'm not even going to say anything about a potential fight between him and Terrence Crawford, which would just be so awesome. But that's probably not going to happen for a while. So, we shall see. College World Series gets started tomorrow. It's a good time. It's not all that bad for sports fans when the NBA season is over and we get into just baseball. Also, by the way, news broke today. Conor McGregor, I should not say his name first. Khabib Nurmagomedov and Conor McGregor are rumored to be finally underway in talks for what would be undoubtedly the biggest fight in the history of the UFC by a mile. October 9th, UFC 229. Fingers crossed. That's going to wrap it up for me. Thank you all for who joined the live chat on YouTube and came in to listen on Anchor. Next week, I'm gonna have my buddy Tino on the show for my exclusive NBA mock draft. I cannot wait for that. I cannot wait. And then I'm gonna also have my buddy, good old buddy Tiggle, Ty Youngholm, will join the show next week as well for episodes 13 and 14. So it's been fun. Thanks a lot, guys. I am signing off here, and I'll be back next Tuesday for my NBA draft mock special with Tino. Thanks a lot, and I will see you then.